today is March 22nd, and this evening at Arizona State University, there will be a debate, the Valley's leading TV executives on the future of local television. Top executives of Phoenix's leading television stations will debate the future of local TV in a roundtable discussion sponsored by the Water Concrete School of Journalism and Mass Communications and the Arizona Broadcasters Association. The discussion will focus on the congressionally mandated changeover to digital broadcasting, which will be fully implemented by 2009. The new age of broadcasting will include high-definition TV and a vast array of new channels. Participants will include executives from KAZ Channel 14, KSAZ Fox 10, KPHL CBS 5, Public Television KAET Channel 8, KPNX Channel 12, Univision, and KNXV ABC 15. Art Brooks, president of the Arizona Broadcasters Association, will be in attendance, and the Concrete School professor, John Kraft, will moderate.
Good evening, and welcome to the Future of Local Television, a roundtable discussion with the Valley's leading TV executives. I'm Chris Callahan, dean of the Walter Cronkite School of Journalism and Mass Communication. On behalf of our entire faculty, thank you all for joining us tonight. Tonight, you will be hearing from the top executives in Phoenix Television about the future of local TV. Advances in TV technologies, coupled with sweeping government regulatory changes, are creating new and exciting opportunities for local television programming. But at the same time, those new technologies and regulations are presenting great challenges, and in some cases, serious dangers to what remains the world's most powerful communications medium. Tonight, our guests will explore in depth those issues, and you will have the opportunity to ask your own questions about the industry that many of you are about to enter. This will be the first in a regular series of expert roundtable discussions we will hold here at the Cronkite School on the electronic media. Before I turn things over to tonight's moderator, please join me in thanking the 8 general managers who have taken time out of their very busy schedules to be here with us tonight. I'd also like to thank our great friend, Art Brooks, president of the Arizona Broadcasters Association. The ABA is co-sponsoring tonight's discussion, and Art is one of the leading experts on the latest in the TV industry. Thanks, Art, for joining us tonight and for everything you do on behalf of the Cronkite School. And finally, I'd like to thank another great friend of the Cronkite School, Mr. Jack Clifford. Mr. Clifford is a member of the Cronkite Endowment Board of Trustees and a longtime television industry executive who, among other accomplishments, founded the Food Network Cable Television Channel. Jack came up with the idea of this panel and is a great supporter of the Cronkite School, journalism students, and mass media education. He is here tonight with his lovely wife, Marguerite. Jack and Marguerite, can you please stand? Our event tonight will be moderated by Professor John Kraft. Dr. Kraft is a senior professor at the Cronkite School and a nationally recognized expert in media management issues. A graduate of Ohio University, Dr. Kraft has taught at the Cronkite School for 33 years. And I can tell you from personal experience that it is impossible to walk into a TV station in this town without running into one of John's former students. He's a wonderful educator who has impacted many lives, and we're delighted that he was able to moderate tonight's panel. Dr. Kraft, thank you very much.
Thank you for all being here tonight. I really feel good that you're here with us to hear all about what the future of television is all about. Excuse me. Yeah, thank you very much. Brandy would like to remind us all to turn off our cell phones so that we don't... Thank you, Brandy. How do you do this? Great. You know, I've been watching TV for about 50 years now. I know you don't buy that. I can't possibly have been here at the beginning of TV, but I guess it's true. But during those 50 years, I've become very, very comfortable with it. I like television. Television has become very, very predictable. So I know what's going to happen when I turn on the TV set when I go home tonight. There have been some changes over the years. Certainly color came along in the 60s, and that was kind of neat. And then in the 70s, late 70s, VCRs and cable. And that was fun because that was many more channels. Then satellite TV in the 1990s or so. But for the most part, television looked very much the same. Operated in pretty much the same manner. And it had the same business model for all of those years. The old line television studios or movie studios were the manufacturers of the product. The three or four then television networks distributed the product. They were the wholesalers, if you will. And the local TV stations were the retailers. They provided the information and the entertainment to the audiences for free, for the most part. Now, in exchange for that information and entertainment, the viewer had to watch some commercial messages and hopefully buy some of the products that they saw advertised. It was a pretty efficient system, and one that's been very successful in this country and now is pretty much successful around the world. It had been successful for about 80 years or so, but it is a system that is based in part on the retailer, the TV station, of having a certain exclusivity in a particular local market. If you wanted to watch a certain station or a certain program, for example, maybe the 70s show, and in a certain town like Phoenix, then you had to tune to a certain local station to find that show, like Channel 45 in this market. But in the 2000s, the digital revolution came to town in the form of the Internet. And the same technology that allows the distribution of my emails around the world very quickly, almost instantly, can now allow information and entertainment, that is the programming of the television station, to be distributed anywhere through our computer networks. We no longer need the television station as the programming retailer, if we go to that type of system. Now, the trade press is full of stories of this new technology, of AOL and iTunes and Verizon all getting into the business of downloading television shows. And that's going to have a tremendous impact on what television is all about. Like the Main Street shopkeepers failing today before the advances of Walmart, the local TV stations could become victims of the Internet, or your cell phone, or TiVos, or iPods. Digital technology will change the face of television. And my 50-year comfort zone watching television may be about to disappear. Congress, through the FCC, is turning off the analog transmitters of all of these television stations on February 17th. 2009. I think that's a Monday. That is predicted to be the deadline, the end of the game for analog transmission of television. And we'll go into a new system after that. What happens when my television set goes dark? What's the future of local television in this digital age? I think the best people to answer that question are the people that work on it right now, trying to figure out how their stations will become competitive forces in the future. And these are the general managers of the Phoenix television stations. They've all come together here tonight to share their visions of what they will be doing in the future as our business changes radically. The Phoenix market is a very important one. Number 14 in size, but more importantly, it's one of the fastest growing areas in the country. economy. It's a very desirable demographic that lives here. The largest media companies in the world have chosen Phoenix as a place to invest in local television. Gannett is here, Fox, Scripps Howard, VLO, Meredith. They're all represented here. And several of those companies have multiple media outlets in this market. We also have one of the most successful of the Spanish language stations, Univision, one of the most watched public television stations in the country, and a locally owned independent station, AZTV. What I'm going to do is ask each one of these people to introduce themselves. They're all managers, they're all in charge, they're all making the decisions of what television will be in the future. I'm going to ask each one of them to give a really short bio, where they were before, and maybe something, a very, very, very short something about the station and the company that they work for. And then it's on to the questions that will help me understand what the future of local television is. So, Art, can I start with you?
So, John. My name is Art Brooks, and I have been called a lot of things in my lifetime, and I'm not sure leading authority has ever been one of them, Dean. But I've been in and around the broadcast industry for almost 34 years. I started in television a long time ago, and after 6 months I decided I had a face that was really suited for radio. So I spent the next 17 years in that wonderful industry of radio. And for the past 16, almost 17 years now, I've been managing the State Broadcast Association, which is a member association for all the radio and TV stations in the state. And in that position as president and CEO, one of my main charges is taking care of all of the government relations work in Washington. I represent our membership before the Arizona delegation in Congress, 2 senators and 8 House members, and also at the state legislature when issues arise of importance to our industry.
My name is Jamie Aiken. I am general manager of WB6 and station manager of 3TV. I actually started in newspapers way back when. I was mostly newspaper training in college and did that, edited the school newspaper, and then had a year left, went into television. But I got into newspapers right out of school, edited a newspaper in Durango, Colorado, which was great because I got to learn how to ski for a couple of years. And then decided that I couldn't afford living on $9,000 a year, and I needed to get into big-time money, so I went into television. Went to Wichita Falls, Texas, got big money, $11,000 a year, and as quickly as possible made it up to a big market. I moved to Dallas in the early 80s, worked for the CBS, then the CBS affiliate there as a reporter and a producer, where we had an incredibly dynamic assistant news director. I knew he was going places, and sure enough, here he is, Steve Hamill. Sometimes roads really do cross in this business. Worked for BLO most of the 90s as a producer and a reporter. Was an executive producer of morning shows, then became programming director, then moved over to a cable news service that served all of Texas for 5 years, and then was station manager for a short time at WFAA in Dallas, and then was fortunate enough to move out here to take this position. So, what do you do? And another cross here. Ron worked for VLO as well.
Thank you. And first of all, welcome and congratulations for being here. Congratulations for being part of the magnificent Cronkite School of Journalism and Mass Communications. I lecture occasionally at the school and always impressed with the students. And thank you, Dean Callahan, for having us, and Jack Clifford, for thinking of this idea. You're all going to be very honored tonight, and I will learn something on this panel from all of my fellow panelists, but also from you guys with your questions, etc. I run AZTV. We're the David fighting all these Goliaths in the market, but I started my career, grew up here, forgive me, went to the University of Arizona, started my career in Chicago, and then slowly but surely worked my way back to Arizona. I got back to Phoenix in 88, where I had the privilege of running Channel 10, and then did a little stint in Tucson with the WB, and now back up in Phoenix with AZTV. Quick little synopsis. John painted a great picture of sort of the past and possibly the future. This is still a killer, wonderful business. Imagine if you had up here all the general managers of all the car dealers in Phoenix. There'd be 150 of them here. for better programming, better technology. And as you're here in the future tonight or in the evening tonight, four signals or five signals instead of one, and opportunities for you and others to program and help us in the future. So thank you for having us here.
Good evening. My name is Greg Gitzvig. I'm the general manager of 8 KAET, the PBS station in Phoenix. And it makes me pretty nervous being surrounded by all these smart people. But I'll try and contribute a little. I've always considered myself pretty fortunate. Very, very early on in my life, I identified the career I wanted to be in, and that was television. And it was actually between my junior and senior year in high school that I was able to get a part-time job at a TV station as a mailboy. And I loved the business. I worked my way into production, on through college, worked my way through college working at a TV station. After college, I was at Vietnam era, so I spent a couple years in the service. And in the wisdom of the government, of course, they saw my background. I actually had a marketing degree in college, and but I had all this background in television, so they sent me to the Naval Communications Station in Norfolk, Virginia, where I did cost accounting work. So the government is very wise in how they choose positions for people. So after getting back from the service, I spent 5 years in the cable industry managing cable systems, and then got back into broadcasting, first in promotion and then operations management. And before I came here to Phoenix, I was vice president of operations for an NBC station, and was just thrilled to accept a position as general manager at a public station, actually for the opportunities to do local programming, which I'll be happy to talk about later.
Thanks, Greg. Steve Hamill from CBS 5 KPHO-TV. Started in radio, graduated from Syracuse University, and as Jamie mentioned, we did work together 20-some years ago, and it just points out to the fact that this is a very small industry, and you never know who you're sitting next to there if you're going to be working with each other 20 years from now. So it's always a good thing to be nice to each other. and I was privileged to be able to work with Jamie. After radio, I segued into television as a producer, as a reporter. I've done everything, I guess, from wrestling a bear to flying on Air Force One and reporting. Came here from Washington, D.C., where I was during 9/11 and anthrax and so on. And have been here as general manager at KPHO-TV. I've been here in Phoenix for a little over 3 years.
John Meisner, President General Manager of KPNX Channel 12 and Channel 2 and Flagstaff. I also have responsibilities at ABCentral.com. I have never wrestled a bear. I will, however, echo Ron's comments that I think this is a very exciting time in communications. Your point about, Greg's point about the small number of folks sitting up here at the table, I think speaks to the strength of this business. It's a little bit like deja vu for me because years ago, in the 70s, I was at a program just like this, but I was sitting in the audience, and it was the general managers from the Los Angeles radio stations, and I approached one of them after the speech, and he ended up offering me a job, and that's how I got started. He said, "I have good news and I have bad news. We're going to offer you a job, but it's going to be in Fresno." So I packed up the car and headed north. I've been fortunate to work in some good markets, including Fresno, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Atlanta, Georgia. Currently work for Gannett, a big news and information company, internationally with properties in the United Kingdom and also domestically, television, internet, and newspaper, including USA.com.
That's a tough act to follow between bear wrestling and Gannett. But I'm Pat Nevins, the general manager of Fox 10, Phoenix 45, and Fox Sports Net, Arizona. And, one of my biggest fears in Washington, you're seeing the size of this panel today with 8 or 9 people on it, was that our panel size might actually be bigger than the audience size. So I was glad to see that.
They knew you were coming, Pat.
But again, a great turnout, and I think that everybody in this room has made a figure out what you want to do with your career. I was not that, I guess, advanced when I was in college in 1988. I graduated from Washington State. Really had no clue what I wanted to do. I just knew that I wanted to sell something. Wasn't sure what it was going to be. And as luck would have it, right out of college, my first job was as a sales rep for a local TV station in Spokane. And I quickly realized that it was a great industry, it was a great product, and I looked around at what everybody else was selling that I graduated with, and there was really no comparison. Nobody else had the ability to make somebody's cash register ring. And that's what excited me, that's what got me passionate about this business, and now I hate to say 18 years later, I'm still every bit as passionate about making people's cash registers ring and what we provide to our community. So I think the introduction was a pretty grim or bleak outlook at what our industry has in front of us. And certainly we have some challenges, but I echo what some of the other panelists have said, that I think with those challenges presents a great opportunity, and it's a great business to be in, and I think the next 5 or 10 years it will be increasingly even better. So I look forward to what the future holds.
Well, I got promoted as general manager, vice president of Univision in September. My career started with Edmundo as an intern in finance area. I actually wanted to be a stockbroker in '97, but the market crashed. So I sat there, well, what am I going to do next with a finance degree? So I looked into the entertainment side of the category, and I found television by luck. Did finance for 3 years, realized that was not my calling, quit my job as a finance manager, and started as a sales assistant at Univision. I've been with Univision for 15 years now, worked in LA for 7 with our flagship station. Here in Arizona, we manage 7 operational stations, Tucson, Flagstaff, and Douglas. We've managed 2 networks, Univision and Telefutura. And, you know, it's interesting for me because I'm doing right now a general sales manager and general manager, so we get to do 2 sides of the coin, which is very difficult to balance when you're trying to keep sales up and the integrity of the programming. But nevertheless, Univision is a very successful company in the Valley.
Well, you can tell we've come from some different paths to get here, and I thought the Durango, Colorado market was, you know, maybe this, but I think I've got you beat. I started out in media at a radio station called KUAI Radio in Ele'ele, Hawaii, on the island of Kauai. And I attended I graduated from University of Hawaii, and that's how I got my start. My intention in the world when I was in college was to save the whales. So I realized that I couldn't make any money doing that. And so I got into broadcast, and I worked in Hawaii for a while, moved to Tulsa, Oklahoma, worked in radio there, eventually went to work for Scripps. I've been with Scripps Howard now for 20 years, worked in sales, both in Tulsa and here in Phoenix. I was promoted to general manager last October here in Phoenix. And as you can see, it's not a big girls' club. So I'm very honored to have received the promotion. And it's just great to see you guys all out here. I really am impressed with the attendance as well. Our company, EW Scripps, not only is in the television business, but we also own networks. We talked about Jack having found the Food Network. Scripps now owns the Food Network, HGTV, Fine Living, DIY, A Great American Country, I don't even know what else now, and it just bought a couple of internet companies, ShopZilla and an internet company in London. We also have 27 newspapers, so it's a pretty diverse company, and every time we think, I think we haven't figured out, they buy something else kind of odd. So we've got a lot going on, and it's exciting because I think all of these different media will contribute to our future.
Thank you, Janice and guys. I think what I'll do is start and ask the first question of Art Brooks. Art, you travel to Washington frequently and talk with the FCC and the Congress and such. Why are you going to let them turn off the TV transmitters and make my TV sets obsolete? Give us some background of what this whole thing is about.
Wow.
that my good friend Senator John McCain and members of the Commerce Committee and FCC commissioners will probably disagree with anyone outside of that circle started us down this path. But in 1996, under the Clinton administration, there was a bill passed in Congress called the Telecommunications Act of 1996. And that Telecom Act did a whole bunch of things for our industry, and most notably in the television industry began this transition from analog to digital technology. And it's a very exciting time for our industry. It was designed to be a 10-year transition period, but there were so many moving parts. This year, this July, would have been that 10th anniversary. Just in January of this year, a bill was passed in Congress naming February 17th, 2009 as the official end of the transition. And it'll be on that date that all the analog channels that you've been watching for 50 years will cease to exist. And from that day forward, it'll just be the digital channels that the TV stations have been already broadcasting, mostly in the Phoenix area since 98, 99, that will carry forth. And the reason for that transition period is twofold. It's much more complicated than the transition was from black and white to color. At least your TV set would still operate. You'd still have a black and white picture, but your TV set would still operate. In this technology, if it would end right now today in Arizona, there's 540,000 what we call TV households that are not wired to cable. They do not receive a satellite reception for television. They rely solely, strictly on over-the-air television. They would lose their television today if that were to happen today. So one of the reasons for extending the transition is to allow, there's a couple of manufacturers that have stepped in to agree to start manufacturing a set-top box. Yeah, right, just what you need is another box on your TV set, right? Well, except this one is going to allow your TV set to continue to operate. It'll receive a digital signal, transfer it back to analog, and your set will continue to operate. The manufacturers tell us that those boxes will have a price tag of around $50. And in the bill that was just passed in Congress in January, setting the hard date to end the transition, has $1.5 billion set aside to subsidize those families that feel that they need help to buy that set-top box. So Congress is prepared for that. We're prepared for the transition. Plus, the other component that has made this somewhat difficult is the manufacturers themselves. Throughout this transition, almost every year, the manufacturers continue to sell about 20 million analog TV sets at the same time trying to sell new digital TV sets. So they're almost competing against the technology themselves. And all of that has been bothersome. The main fact for the manager sitting here will tell you is we needed parity in viewership. The digital signal, when you start a brand new technology, so if you can imagine every TV station in Phoenix being assigned a new channel, and which they've been operating on now since the late 90s for digital broadcasting, they've been dual broadcasting on these two channels since that time. And that's not really something that they would rather spend their time or exhaust their resources on. They'd rather do that creating new programming, which is going to happen in the digital world. That's the exciting part. When we're all said and done with the transition, it'll all be figured out. TV sets will be saved for the day. There will be set-top boxes. There will be, if you're wired to cable, if you're on a satellite dish, you're going to be fine. The problem is within a home, each one of your homes has more than one TV set probably. In America, I think the average right now is 3 or 4 TV sets. And some of those may continue to operate, some of them may not. The other way, John, to get around this is to go out and buy a digital TV set, So Now, that'll help get this thing sped along. But anyway, the exciting part is, as you'll hear on the panel, there's going to be a lot of new programming. It takes less spectrum space to produce the primary signal for each TV station, which leaves room in that band of spectrum in the same channel band that they're using right now, 6 megahertz of spectrum, to produce 3 or 4 new channels. Could be any kind of product, and you'll be hearing about some of those here tonight. So it's an exciting time. We're an industry that has always had one revenue stream, when our competitors have always had 3 or 4 revenue streams. So we're about to come into the marketplace in a large way, larger than free over-the-air television has ever done in the history. This has no precedent before it. So it's a historic time, and quite frankly, we're really excited about it. And if I can say one more thing, John, there's one major thing that separates free over-the-air television from all the other industries, from internet, from cable, from satellite. When it comes right down to time of emergency or time of need, these guys right here are your first responders. Before law enforcement, they're out there with law enforcement, they're out there with the fire department, they're out there with hazmat crews. We are licensed by the government to operate and respond to the community needs. And one of those major needs is being the instrument of the emergency alert system. The other services do not have that. They do not have that rule or regulation. We have that with us. We are the first responders in a true emergency. Over the air television and radio is it.
Thanks, sir. It sounds to me like all of a sudden there are going to be 4 times as many channels that you guys can program and sell advertising on. And that sounds like an opportunity. So I wonder if I could just throw it open to anybody and all of you. What are you going to do with those channels?
Yeah, I think
that was going to
go first right now.
there's this little basketball thing called life. And we dipped our little toe into this digital world. And I'm the same guy who doesn't quite know how fax works. I get my little piece of paper through the wire. But last Thursday, I was the general manager, I guess, of 4 television stations. We had the main game on what we call the Big 5, and then we had 3 other games that were going on at the same time that we could broadcast from CBS and that we could sell advertising on from locally. So the response we got from viewers was phenomenal. The major cable carrier here is Cox. They have about 600,000 subscribers, give or take. And they believe they have about half of those 600,000 have a digital set. So all those people could pick and choose the games they wanted to watch from a programming standpoint. And again, you know, it's called multicasting, and it's something that Art and I, or Senator McCain, talking about multicasting, and it's happening, and it's going to happen more and more with all of the stations.
I'll add to that. We launched a 24-hour weather channel called Weather Plus on our digital band. We launched that a few months ago, and it's 24-hour weather on digital 12.2. And we also stream it on azcentral.com. Folks can get it over the air, or they can get it through their cable subscriber, and that's our first play in that space.
And somebody else.
I would add to something that we were surprised at with BLO, but it was a terrific use for us. We're all trying to figure out what we're going to do, frankly, with those other channels. But when Katrina blew through New Orleans, we had a television station there, WWL. WWL was the only broadcast station that remained on the air through the first several days of that hurricane. And as you can imagine, there are a lot of people around the Gulf Coast who either live there, live near there, or certainly have family there. And frankly, people across the country we used on 3.2, our KTVK subchannel, we aired WWL's broadcast 24/7 on 3.2. Our Houston station did that, Dallas station, San Antonio, Austin, and it turned out to be a really great public service, one that we wouldn't have expected to put on there, but it was there, and without it, we could never have done that for our viewers.
I could comment that PBS is very excited about the multicasting area. We've been doing quite a bit ourselves. Currently, we carry a HD channel and one standard definition channel. And we've been dabbling with, not to get into the technology, but trying to maximize the capability of the bit stream. And we've been dabbling with one high definition, two standard definition channels. And sort of things on the horizon for us would include a 24-hour kids channel targeted to young kids ages, probably kindergarten through maybe third grade. There's a definite possibility of a full-time channel called Create, which would be self-improvement, everything from painting to things around the house, that sort of thing. And we're also trying to develop a full-time channel called Town Square, which would include a lot of national, maybe events or discussions going on, but give us a great opportunity to do a lot more local events in that platform and have sort of a branded platform where people know that they can turn to. So a lot is going on in multicasting.
I would add that those of you that think that you'd like to be in the production business, vision or think about your own lifestyle, think of the lifestyle of your family, your parents, your grandparents, etc., and think about all the things that we do with our lives, whether it be education, spiritual, family, entertainment, credit to Jack and his pioneers in the cable industry, food, who would ever thought the Food Network, Speed Channel, hobbies, sports. All of the dreams that America has of all these choices are really coming true, not only in cable, but now in the opportunity over the air with this multicasting. But the difference will be for us, and certainly for you as viewers and perhaps someday programmers of these channels, is we will be local. We will have localism. We will do local sports, local food, local shopping, local entertainment, local church services, etc., because of the opportunities. We do some of that now in our broadcasting. Of course, the definition of broadcasting as opposed to narrowcasting is you appeal to lots of age groups and demographics. We'll have that opportunity now with multiple channels, so it's really a giant, really revolution, John, in terms of extra channels, and you'll all be part of that in some way or another.
Right now at Univision, we broadcast two standard definition channels for one computer. In terms of content, we are owned by the largest producer of Spanish programming in the world, so content is not an issue for us. What is really a stake for us is the end user, as it is in a marketplace, only 43% of the population have cable. So now you're moving into a new venture, new technology that is very, as it is, it's difficult for us to understand, let alone, you know, Spanish viewers. It's going to be even more difficult. So our challenge is not going to be the programming. Our challenge is actually going to be the technology to help the viewer, the end user, understand how to consume it, how to operate it, and how to get it, because $50 is not cheap.
Right.
Yes?
Yeah, you know, we are currently working on plans for an additional channel. That's about all I can say about it right now.
Okay.
Come on. Call on me.
What do you think?
I see.
Out of here.
Well, I'd like to go back to Ron's thing on localism. Right now, localism, in my view, is local news. And there are 5, 6, 7 television stations in the market that are strong news stations. Is there a market for that? Can the market support 5 news stations, 6 news stations, all doing basically the same thing? If not, who's going to blink first?
I'll go ahead and try to tackle that one. Sticking my neck out here, but you know, I think the simple answer is yes. There's definitely a market for it. I think a market like Phoenix has grown as much as it has over the last 10 or 15 years. As the population increases, really the amount of news content that's available hasn't. I mean, There's still the same number of players, roughly the same number of newscasts. But what I think makes the difference, though, is everybody has a unique approach. Every station here has a unique approach to how they promote, how they cover, how they anchor, how they report, how they write news. And it's more options. It's more choice. It's everybody out here has a different feel for what they like. And I think it's good in a market like this that we have as much news competition as we do, because we like it that people get to choose what they want to watch, and that you do have other options, especially in a market that's growing this fast, is that when people first come to Phoenix, they don't have the set viewing patterns that many of our area viewers have had for 15 or 20 years. They're all new. So they sample channels, they look around, they see what's the best fit, what format they like the best, and hopefully they watch Fox, and hopefully they like what they see. But if they don't, there's still plenty of other options, and I think that's good for the viewer, it's good for competition, and it's good for our industry.
I mean, I would agree, we are surviving, and we all do have, product on the air, and, I'm always kind of proud of saying I come from here when I'm outside of the market, because it is it's not for sissies here at all in Phoenix, Arizona. The best players in the world of broadcast are right here, and there's no slouches, and everybody's doing a great job. So, I think that, you're very proud of working here and working in the business that we're in.
In terms of localism, I agree. There are some cities where some stations have dropped out of business in terms of certainly in terms of news. I was in St. Louis for a number of years. The ABC affiliate in St. Louis, which is owned by Sinclair, does not have a news department, and they determined in that market environment that competition there was too strong for them. However, in this market, with the growing population, A, there is room for it, B, there's the appetite for it, and C, with multicasting, let's say there's a, it gets back to localism. If there is a debate for Tempe Town Council, I don't think any general manager would interrupt ER for that or interrupt CSI for that. But if we have another channel that is dedicated towards localism, there's no problem continuing airing ER, continuing airing CSI or American Idol. And for those who want to watch the local debate, they can. And for those who want to continue watching entertainment programming, they can.
For Univision, we're actually in a very unique situation because the growth of the market, if you look at 5 years, as of 2000 to date, the Hispanic market has grown over 100% overall. There's limited options in terms of news, localized news here for Spanish media. So, and we have a history of being very localized within the community. And being a limited choice, it gives us a better opportunity to capture the audience faster and quicker, because competition, believe it or not, for us is very limited. So we tend to be in a very unique position when it comes to local news.
I think there's one thing that I think speaks very highly of the quality programming that exists with over-the-air television, and that is for a city the size of Phoenix, the metropolitan area the size that we have here in the Valley, we have a relatively low cable penetration percentage. It's just over 60%. And that's way below the national average. And I think that speaks highly to the quality of programming that these stations put out right now. And it's only going to get better in the digital age.
Yeah. Just one other thing about localism. And I think I heard this at a lecture during the last month. Localism, I think more and more is going to become that the viewers are becoming more involved in the content. The video cameras and the technology, email files, video files and all that, I think that those things are going to become much more important. I mean, we see now with storm coverage and things like that that we're getting a lot of our content from from people that are amateurs. And, you know, I could see that happening a lot more in the future, that we would be getting a lot more images and a lot more information from people that are actually in place at the time and sending it to the TV stations or to our other channels or to the broadband channels.
But that brings us to an interesting question. With a computer and a camera, you create a blog, and every citizen can become a journalist. So why do we need corporate broadcast journalists?
Well, I'm not sure every citizen is credible as a journalist. I would say that. I mean, I've been on blogs that I personally think a lot of, but I've also been on ones where you don't know who this, where they're coming from, you know, and whether you can believe what you're reading or not. And I think you have to be very careful in looking at blogs and trying to determine what's what.
I think that's a great discussion, but I would say just for us, what we bring to the table is a huge number of resources and a lot of money and a lot of equipment to throw at very important events. I don't worry about local television. If there's a hazardous waste event, if there's bad weather, if there's tragedy anywhere, where are you going to go? I mean, if all the television stations went black, where are you going to get this stuff? Sure, you'd go to the web, but it's not going to be immediate. It's not going to be as dynamic as you need it. We're not going anywhere. I think what we have to face, however, is that there are any number of new ways to get information. This isn't about us. This is about you. Where do you go get your information, and how relevant are we? I think that our future is going to be wrapped up in getting out of our legacy ways of doing business and finding ways to deliver how you want this information delivered. If we stick with our old business model, we're going to have a tough time. We're going to have to figure out how to aggregate, I think, and it's scary for us because it really gets us out of our comfort zone. But one thing that we do bring is some credibility as being information people. I think we're going to have to somehow be aggregators. RSS feeds, being able to aggregate some material that we don't even get, that doesn't even come from us. We need to be your portal, and we're going to be competing with each other to be your portal for information. And the best thing we've got going for each of us right now is our brand and our credibility, and that's what we're going to have to use.
So for the last 50 years or so, television stations perhaps have looked at themselves as distributors of information and not so much as creators of information. Perhaps the future is in the business of creating information.
I think it's all content. I think we have to be delivery agnostic. And it's all going to be about being a media company now instead of being television broadcasters.
Now, I think we've been talking a lot about technology and going, well, this digital stuff is going to do this to television and the Internet is going to do this. Look back in history. I think these were the same arguments when television was starting as a technology and all the people in radio were fearful that radio would go away, and now it's probably stronger than ever. I don't think we talk about television, but we're not just a technology. I think in so many ways, stations represent communities that people develop affinity toward. You watch a certain channel because you like a certain anchor, or you like their style of news, or you like their style of programming, or any number of factors. I don't think you choose it based on technology. You choose it because, in a way, a television station becomes a community, and you feel close to that station. That probably makes them your number one choice. And just think about your own viewing habits. It's something more than it because it's on the dial. I don't think the internet is just one more technology. It's not going to be something that's going to eliminate television.
I totally agree with that statement. For example, in our marketplace, if you look at the total number of viewers that we get, 61% of them that do not watch any other station but only Univision. It has nothing to do with other than the fact that we provide the credibility and the quality of programming they're looking for. Essentially, you, the viewer, are literally going to command and dictate how we program the station, because the technologies that are making a difference to us is what you watch and what you're asking us to put on the air. That's what really is going to dictate how well we do our jobs.
Yeah, I think it's critically important, both locally on the network level and on the syndication level, is that we have to continue to find a way to improve, to get better. And, you know, last night was a great example. You know, 5 years into it, American Idol, still the number one show on television, regardless of a 200-channel universe, 30% of the people watching TV last night found American Idol. It's the best show on TV. We have the same challenge locally with news. We have to continue to find better ways to produce our news that informs and educates viewers to the degree that they want to watch it, that they seek it out. If they don't seek it out and they don't watch it, then we haven't done our job.
I have kind of a different opinion. I think we have to pay a lot of attention to the different age segments that are out there. And I'm going to take a guess that everybody at this table is over 30. We simply consume media a lot differently than those of you in school consume media. And we talk about the three screens. We talk about the television screens, and we talk about computer screens, and we talk about portable screens. And I bet many of you consume your media on portable screens. And when you go to find out the news of the day, you're not necessarily sitting down and watching Brian Williams at the Nightly News or Mark Curtis and Lynn Cicuni anchoring Arizona Nightly News. So as broadcasters, I think we need to be part of the solution here. And this kind of all came to a head a couple of weeks ago when we had that hostage situation on Central Avenue. And for the first time, one of my photojournalists told me this, they were shooting the hostage scene with a camera, not with a gun, and a viewer walked up with a laptop, with a wireless card, and we had opted not to interrupt programming on Channel 12. But we were streaming live reports over AC Central. And this consumer, this viewer, this person walked down Central Avenue, and there was Mark Curtis reporting the news live on the laptop with a wireless card. And at that point, it became really apparent to our news crew that, wow, this is not just theoretical. This is how people are consuming news these days. So it makes for an interesting day as we come in and we think about these three screens, TV, computer monitors, and portable screens. How are we going to provide local content? And back to your question or point, John, what's the business model for keeping all of this viable? You know, the engineers in the building want to launch every new initiative there is, but at a certain point, you know, I need to pay the bills. And you have to look at how you're going to be able to do that. And that gets back to sub fees for advertising revenue. And kind of to your point, too, does it make economic sense to have five helicopters circling the same accident on the 202? I don't know. Helicopters are expensive.
A great transition into the next area, really, and that is the economy of local television, of all television, has been based on advertiser support over the years. And now there's approximately 15 minutes of commercials in every hour, if you look at all the stations out there and add it all together. And audiences have responded to that by buying TiVos and other digital devices that will eliminate those commercials. And advertisers are trying to figure out ways of getting them back to that commercial. But maybe it's time to look at a new revenue stream. Maybe advertiser support, which has been great over the years, is only one way of supporting the kinds of information and entertainment that we should be providing. Any thoughts on what those new revenue streams might be?
I'll jump right into that. We recently went through what are called retransmission consent negotiations, where our television stations negotiated with cable companies for the right to carry our programming. And our company feels very strongly that because of the great expense that we go to produce and broadcast our television shows, whether it's paying the right fees for syndication, being an NBC affiliate, or running a big newsroom, it's expensive. And cable companies and satellite companies resell our programming. So we just concluded these negotiations with 14 cable operators in our market. And that is a new revenue stream for our television station.
Ditto that. I want to get back to one of your premises, which I may or may not agree with, and that's why people have TiVo. I don't think people have TiVo necessarily to eliminate the commercials. I think that's a side thing. I think they have TiVo for convenience because they're not home and their favorite programs on. I think all that gets back to, I hate to continue using the L word, localism. I think if you were producing the content, the live content, of something that's going on now, more people do not use TiVo when there are live events going on, such as a live newscast or a hostage situation, because they want to get that information now. So I may be naive, but I still think that people are going to be watching commercials during live programming because they want to be watching it live.
Okay.
John, if I might jump in a little bit, a couple thoughts. First of all, you are experiencing, seeing as viewers, as consumers, some really terrific newscasts and terrific local activities in the market, whether it be talk shows or shopping opportunities on television, et cetera. And Jamie and John Meisner, I think, mentioned something about content. Whether the content is a hostage situation or breaking news or what the weather's going to be tomorrow, there are many ways to distribute that, of course. And you might get it on your wireless computer. You might get it on the Internet through our websites and other websites that pick up that information. But the infrastructure that allows us to gather that is still the same, and you can't change that. It does lead to how we're measured, and we've all been for the word Nielsen, and we've all been in panels that with Nielsen, and sometimes we're watching Nielsen's experts talk to us about the future. If you can imagine a market this size, which is ranked 14th in size and population, but about 12th in revenue, and with a little imagination, we'll be in the top 10 in the next year or so, having 1,660,000 homes, and you vision yourself as taking statistics, well, how many homes does it take to measure what those audiences are really watching with 200 channels and all these local channels and more to come due to multicasting? It's a staggeringly low number, and I'll tell you, we can guess and see a show of hands, but it's 400. And you think, well, now 1,660,000, 400 little meters measure what everybody's watching. No one is measuring cell phone pictures, if you happen to see that, or wireless. Nobody's measuring college dorms. Nobody's measuring restaurants, bars, et cetera, military bases. So here the signals are out there, either on cable, satellite, or over the air, and hundreds of thousands, millions are watching, and we have 400 meters somewhere out there that are really trying to tell us how many people are there, what the advertisers will pay, et cetera. So that is a challenge technologically that it's you're going to hear more and more about in the next 5 to 10 years. Is the industry, Nielsen right now is a monopoly, used to have a couple competitors, they don't anymore, trying to get their arms around Wi-Fi's and all of the technologies that exist to measure audiences.
You know, and this is kind of a futuristic thing, but, you know, I look at the way, we use the Internet now, and I know that I receive emails every day from people that I do business with all the time, and I don't mind receiving the emails from the airlines that I travel on or from, the places that I buy online or, you know, the drugstore that I go to. And, you know, I don't think it's a huge jump, you know, to the future when advertising will be discriminating enough to be advertising that we want to have. And I think that is a really exciting, future for our media is that, you know, if we can provide, this format and this opportunity for advertisers to really be talking to the people they want to talk to and who want to be talked to about their product, it's a very viable marketplace. And I was thinking about the other day when I opened up my internet and I had 20 things, but I didn't care. It was order, certificate, and all these things that I wanted in my life, and they were advertisers I embraced. So I hope we will get to that point.
Can we do that as we move? Well, first of all, I guess cable comes to mind, and secondly, maybe the telephone company providing programming on demand, which would be supported specifically by advertising designed to reach that particular person.
Right.
and therefore do we need a local TV station?
Well, again, you're going to hear me say it a lot. For our market, we're still very unique because our culture, consumption of television is still a family unit. So technology has not taken hold of our cultural habits of viewing television. So Univision right now tends to follow a little bit of both models, the old model and the new model. We have Univision Online, which is the number one website in Spanish, but nevertheless, when you look at the revenue streams that we get, just think about it this way. In L.A., the market is about $1.2 billion in L.A., and our station over there, they're lucky if they do 7 or 8% of the revenue. So we're still trying to catch up with the rest of our partners here just to get the right share of revenue for our viewership shares, and we're not even close to that yet. On the other hand, we are aware that we have to keep up with the new technology because there is second, third, fourth generation Hispanics. While they do still watch Spanish television, those viewers still, in some form or another, are getting the information over the web.
You know, I think probably you have some questions, maybe like where are the jobs in the digital future? But let's open up the floor, and if you have a question, Dean Callahan has a microphone, and hold up your hand, he'll come around, ask the question, here you go.
So what are the chances that, like, Fox 10 will just take one of their extra channels and just put Fox Sports Net on it, or, you know, ABC 15 will just take their extra channel and put Food Network or something on it? What's the possibility of that happening?
That's probably not an option at this point at all. But I do think, you know, some of what you saw during March Madness with CBS, those options are certainly going to present themselves more frequently down the future. But since this is not the intent of multicasting from our perspective is not to take the speed channel off of cable and put it onto one of our digital platforms. You know, each cable network right now is succeeding on their own. And, but again, it just goes back to more options doesn't necessarily mean more viewers. Right now there's 200 channels out there. If there were 500 channels out there, your personal viewing habits probably wouldn't change that much. You'd probably watch 10 or 15 channels on a weekly basis. You wouldn't suddenly go from 10 or 15 to 50. It's just, more clutter doesn't mean, you know, less ratings for us. So keep that in mind.
I don't know. I don't know that we would use one of our cable networks, but there are some interesting offerings out there that are being, sort of peddled to us for opportunities. There are networks being put together that is old syndicated programming. There's music video networks that are being brought to us. So unless we do create something of our own that is a local product, there are other things that people are putting together and trying to market to TV stations to use their extra spectrum for. You never know what you might see.
Over here. One closer, okay.
You guys were talking about TiVo, DVR, and live events, viewership, and commercials and things like that. One scheduled event that people tend not to record our sporting events. Do you see sports contracts kind of even getting higher and things like that for the major sports, Major League Baseball, NFL, NBA, things like that?
Great question. The quick answer is yes. I think that's why you're seeing all the wonderful rights fees that are paid to the NFL, the NBA. In our market, of course, the D-backs, the Suns, the Cardinals, the Mercury, the ASU, U of A, NAU, sporting events all garner great ratings, great shares, great business models. And I would add one thing, John, a little bit on advertisers. Advertisers are very, very smart. They're very savvy, and they measure, and they've now used the word accountability. They want accountability for their advertising from us and from other partners in the chain. And that means that if advertising is not working on cable, satellite, over the air, sporting events, or whatever the carriers are, newscasts, etc., they won't be back. They measure now with web hits that happen. You probably read about Super Bowl ads run, cost $2.5 million, and they get 200,000 unique visits to their website right after the spot runs. And the advertisement may not even ask to go to the website. So works because it is intrusive. It is in every home. We're in 98-99% of the homes. Somebody mentioned cable, they're about 55-60%. Satellite here has done a great job. They're in only 22-25% of the homes. Over the years, very important to Univision and all of us. These are mass, big numbers. And again, advertisers correlate and measure that with their not only their web hits, but their phone calls and other ways. So we're accountable to them, and they continue to come back and watch us.
As a follow-up to that, on 3TV, we do have the Diamondbacks, and they do very well for us, and I promise you they're not going backwards. Yeah.
But when it comes to the programming, for example, we broadcast the World Cup live. I don't know if you recall, we did the World Cup out of Japan, Korea. We were showing games at 3 o'clock in the morning, and we were getting some of the highest viewership in sporting events. Univision has about 98% of the total programming. It's first-run programming. We don't do reruns on our air. So for us, the cost of programming is literally huge. We just got the rights again to air the World Cup for the next two seasons. We pay double, upwards of $325 million to secure those rights. But the advertisers, through their measurements, were fortunate that we can recoup that money very quickly.
Hi. I was just wondering, it seems like a lot of the discussion is centered around the future of the business of television, and I understand that it's more advantageous for the business of television for you to take advantage of the new technologies that are available. But at the same time, to what extent is this harmful to the average consumer who really doesn't know any better, that perhaps they're being more alienated because of all this localism?
Anybody want to take a shot?
I'm not.
How would you be alienated by localism?
Can you explain a little bit better? I'm not sure what you mean.
Like, many studies have shown that people are becoming much more alienated as a result of being focused much more on their singular identity and their own community and not looking at the big picture of things and contributing in a larger way to society in ways that are really important, like voting, for example.
Right. You know, it's kind of interesting because I think that our media is doing two things at one time. In one sense, it's very segmented, and you may go into some homes and everybody's got their own television and they're watching their own shows. At the same time, there's, you know, events like American Idol or the Super Bowl where the country just seems to come together, and it's almost patriotic, you know, to all be watching the same thing. So I think the potential, what you're saying is right. There's potential for alienation if you allow, you know, yourself to do that. And, but I always think it's an amazing thing when the country comes together and sees the same thing at the same time. I mean, there's no experience like a Super Bowl or a big event, and you know yourself that that's what you're talking to. Everybody is talking about it together the next day, and it's really unifying, I believe, and not alienating.
I don't know if this is where you're going, but it's frustrating for us anyway. We do 8 hours of news every day, so news is huge for us. And it is a little bit frustrating. You talk about voting, you know, real community service, and yet 30% of the audience watches American Idol. You know, you vote with your remote, and our advertisers are funding us by being able to draw as many of you as we possibly can. And if I did, and now we're on voting, how many of you would watch? You know, and this is one of the opportunities, though, on our websites. I assume most all of us have websites, and that's really been a boom for us because now we feel like we have an avenue where we can do real news, and you can take it or leave it if you like, but we can still serve that audience.
I'd have to say that's where a public station also comes in, is that, you know, I don't view myself as competitive to any of these other stations. You know, I hope we're collaborative, and we're looking for opportunities where it's not a big audience, but a smaller audience and a smaller focused audience that maybe we can do that special on voting while the other people, from an economic standpoint, really can't. The business models for all these people at the table are just incredible. I don't know how they sleep at night at times, knowing the pressures on them to perform. And that's where I think there's a place for a public station in a community, and it should be collaborative and looking for opportunities to do the underserved sort of things.
For Univision, it's, again, we tend to operate a lot more like a community, like we're here, because our viewers tend to watch our news to gather information on how to literally live their daily lives. You know, whether it be our educational issues, immigration, voting issues, we tend to go into the stories that are going to help our viewer really just, you know, what's happening in our community. You'd be surprised the number of calls we get to our front desk asking us for the lawyer that they need help with, whether immigration, then how do I apply to college? You know, all of those areas we address because our community, although we may have the viewer who's been here 10 years, there's still that generational gap where viewers are still part of that first generation within a family who has a little bit of everything. I've been here most of my life in this country, and yet, you know, I go home to California to visit my mom, and she's watching Sábado Gigante, the longest airing show on television. Can you sit there and watch a three-hour show? You should see our community watching a three-hour show and singing the commercial jingles of the advertiser. And you're not, it's not just me. It's grandma, grandpa, mom and dad, sister, younger brother. So, you know, we still behave much as a community-based vehicle.
There always has been, and probably always will be, a tension between what is interesting and what is important. And one could argue that aerial footage of a car chase is more interesting than it is important. And, you know, as journalists, we take our role very seriously. At the same time, we know that if we provide some interesting video, we can slip in a report on the economy. And it's a classic tension. And, you know, it goes back to Nielsen ratings, and those ratings are what enable us to charge $3,000 or $1,000 for a news spot. And we're very dependent on folks tuning in for the interesting, because sometimes the most important news or issue-based news are among the lowest-rated segments of a newscast.
One more, I think, question, and then I would like to take a couple of minutes for each of you to wrap up and tell me what the future of local television is.
I better make it good. Sounds like a lot of pressure. Arizona has such, especially Phoenix, has such a high Hispanic population. How do you daily address that in local news? What goes into the day-to-day editorial decisions at your news station? And how do the English language stations differ, specifically in look or in content, from the Spanish stations?
Well, from our perspective, I'll give you a perfect example. The learning bill, that the whole controversy about learning English, or you know, having that opportunity for students to have the money to be educated and learning English in the state. While we may attack approach it from an instructional more of a view versus more of a sensational, our approach was we let the parents know that this is something that can impact their children, and they have a vote in what determines how their children are going to be educated. I was literally talking to one of the people from the governor's office, and she was telling me that 75% of the Hispanic students in the school districts are U.S. citizens. And that's the type of approach we would take. We will show that our community is going to be impacted, but not just from a point of, you know, they're not depleting the services, the opposite of you. Get educated, get information on what's going to impact your child, and do something about it.
That was such a great question. Maybe we should take a couple of do you guys mind if we had a couple of more questions and then limit your final remarks to like a minute each?
Sure.
Thank you.
Well, as Greg said, we don't sleep at night, so we're here for the long run.
I'm the one up here that really does get a night's sleep.
I'll jump in. You know, we talked about earlier about age segmentation. You also have to segment the Latino audience. When you look at, you know, is a first generation Mexican American going to watch an English language television station? Maybe yes, maybe no. It is much more likely
according to our research and just our feedback from viewers, that a second or third generation enculturated Latino family will watch our English language news because they're more involved with the community than the first generations. We took a bit of a step into Spanish language, and then a few months ago we started broadcasting Spanish language simulcasts of our 6 o'clock news. And we hire translators, and they come into the station at about 5 p.m., and they become Mark Curtis and Lynn Sukuni in Spanish for a half hour, and we've had great feedback to that. But at the editorial desk in the morning, we assess the general market. We assess all aspects of the general market, and hopefully we serve the entire market on a broad-based basis.
I would comment, too, that you have to start at the grassroots level, and I would assume that it's the case in all these newsrooms, and I know it's the case on our staff. It starts with diversity in the staff, that you have all points of view represented, and you try to seek out employees that you do have every perspective represented. And so a Hispanic point of view should naturally bubble up in the course of the newsroom, coming up with the stories of the day and the different perspectives. And I think it's well represented as I look out in the audience, as you're going to be the future generation staffing some of these newsrooms. It's diversity. Diversity is the key.
Hi, my name is Laura Kennedy, and I'm a journalism freshman here. And I just wanted to know, do you think it is important for journalists today to be multi-talented in the many different media, such as TV and radio, and being able to write more than it has been in the past?
I feel very strongly about that. I think that you guys do need to be multi-talented. I'll tell you that we just hired a weekend sports anchor, a female weekend sports anchor, and the thing that was the deciding factor was that she also could shoot and edit. And so for her to be, that kind of have those abilities to be a team player, on a sports staff, just got her the job. She's great on air as well, but she had these other skills. And, I think in the future that it's going to be luxurious for our reporters to only do one thing. I think they're going to have to be able to do other things as well and, edit at their desk and just have lots of skills and write for the web.
I'd echo that. Thank you for that question. It's as you've heard the word business model, what part of the business model, of course, is efficiency of our resources, including human resources. And there's no question that if you've got multi-talented skills, writing, reporting, producing, even experience in sales, marketing, promotion, production, certainly technical, which is puzzling to a lot of us that came through sales, all of those aspects are important. We have business manager in office who, or department head rather in office, who's promotion manager, production manager, website host, executive, voice, and host one of our local shows. Multi-talented, multi-tasked individual, but no smarter than any of you, and just had the experience in radio and television and cable and used that. So that would be a challenge to all of you. You're here because you're interested in the industry. Got interest in certain things, don't just narrow up to news or production or programming. Be as diverse as you can early and then specialize later.
I would go as far as to say even multi-language. You got to look at the Spanish media, for example. You got, a Univision, multi-billion-dollar corporation that 100% in Spanish, but we conduct our business 100% in English. Nevertheless, for gathering information and the resources that it takes to put a newscast, is done in Spanish. So I agree with that. The more skills you have, the more marketable you will become.
I would add to it, too, in this market and in a number of other Southwest markets where the Hispanic population is as high as it is, it's a huge benefit to have bilingual reporters. Oftentimes we'll go out and cover a story, and when we get there, everybody's speaking Spanish. And if our reporter can't speak Spanish, really difficult to make that transition, if not impossible. So, as you enter into the workforce and anybody else out there, if anything you can do, if you want to stay in Phoenix and you want to be on air, a bilingual reporter is a hot property. If two candidates are equally qualified, qualified, and one's bilingual and one's not, the one that's bilingual definitely has a leg up.
I'm going to suggest never let the term "that's not my job" be part of your vocabulary.
Absolutely. If I hope to keep my Cox cable subscription and the high definition, in 3 years from now, do I automatically receive these extra channels that you gentlemen are talking about?
No.
Real quick, I'm sorry.
I'll take that one on. The answer is no. And except if, there's a big if, and you've heard the word multicasting used a lot here this evening. One of our main tasks in this transition as we come towards the end now in 2009 is to gain some agreement with cable and satellite systems to carry those new channels. Right now, they're opposed to that. But we're battling hard to get a multicast agreement.
And second, sorry, for those 540,000 that don't subscribe to cable, what hardware do they have to purchase, or is there going to be some kind of yearly fee, or they just have to buy a digital television in order to get the...
No, there will be a set-top box out. It's my understanding now that LG Electronics is going to have a box out by mid-07, and they'll be available, and they're saying
$50.
By the way, the HD signal over the air is a beautiful thing.
It's awesome, yeah.
So it's kind of crazy. It's kind of back to the future, but stick an antenna up there and get your HD.
Yeah, and incidentally, there is $1.5 billion, $1.5 billion built into the Congress bill that passed in January to subsidize those boxes. If a family needs to fill out a voucher and apply for funding, they'll get that to make sure you get a set-top box.
I do want to add one other point to that question, though, is I think there's an awful lot of questions and concerns about what this transition means. But right now, if you went out and bought an HD compatible television, all you would need is a set of Rabbiters to get any of these stations that we've mentioned, including the primary digital signal for each station, plus the multicast stations if they're available. So all you need is a TV and a set of Rabbiters, and you can pick it up today. You don't have to go through Cox.
I'm gonna ask the panelists, because I gotta say, this is taking the dean's prerogative here. So I'm so excited. We have so many students who want to get in questions. I'm gonna go around real quickly. We're gonna get in as many as we can. I'm gonna ask the panelists, two panelists, to respond to each question, and we'll move it around real quick because I'm an organically incapable kind of.
Phil Donahue. You're Phil Donahue.
I have a quick question regarding ethics and sponsorship for your new talents. When it comes to having, it's my understanding that your morning shows are somewhat sponsored by vendors and so on, and I specifically want ABC 15 to comment on this because it's my understanding that Sonoran Living Live is a show based solely on vendors and sponsorship that they then advertise on the show. It's somewhat played off to be, we just found this great place, but in fact, these people are paying to be on their television show. So at some point, it moved, Tracy Cornett, I believe, it moved from being a news anchor to being a QVC operator, so to speak. And so at what point does the ethics come in and say that this person who is giving you the news and who is to be trusted with giving news is also selling mom-and-pop place down the road, the diner that has paid to be on this network that comes right after our morning news or, you know, an hour after our morning news. So, or even during the news, as I believe Fox 10 has at points. The weather guy goes out and, oh, we're at this karaoke bar, it's so great, let me give you the weather, now let me tell you about the great karaoke bar that these people are paying for us to stay. So at what point do your ethics come in and say, okay, we should not be having someone who's telling us about the murder and about, you know, something like that also be selling at the same time without being completely, without disclosing it, without saying these people are paying right now for us to be on here and playing it off like it's news. You know what I mean? Because I want to do this. I want to be an anchor, and I don't want to have to sell, CDs while I'm doing it.
Right, you know, and there's not any intention to, pull the wool over anyone's eyes about this. We do have a personality on our station, Tracy Cornett, and she does do an hour of morning news, and she was hired, however, to be the host of Sonoran Living. On Sonoran Living, there's a lot of things going on. There are some sponsors of that show that get segments on the show. And there are also independent producers who do go out and find their own stories and their own segments. You might see them shooting something in, up in Prescott and or at a fashion show or whatever. So there are a lot of things going on, and I can see how it can be confusing to understand what part of it is paid and what part of it might be editorial. It's not intentional for it to be confusing. It is just that there's two things going on. Now, what I can tell you is we do try to be very clear that, when she's working on the morning news, that she's a news anchor. There are no paid endorsements. There's nothing else going on. She is a news anchor. And in Sonoran Living, she is a host of a lifestyle show. And that show does have paid sponsors in it. We hope it's clear to you, and if it's not, then we can try to do a better job with that.
I'll take that. We have a show called Arizona Midday. It runs 11 to noon, and that show is not produced by the news department. It's produced by the programming department, and when we decided to do the show, we put a wall up, figuratively, between that show and our news operation. And we go to great extents, we think, to disclose that those are paid segments. And that is a completely paid show. If you want to come in, come on the show and sell a book, or you want to sell tile or whatever you want to do, you pay us to do that. And we do three things. We don't use news resources to produce the show. None of the employees work for the news department. We superimpose the following words: paid for by. So there's no ambiguity. Paid for by. And we have had some prospective advertisers reject being on the show because they wanted to create the illusion that it was not a paid for show. We're not comfortable with that. So it says paid for by. And then we further disclose at the end of the show that these are paid sponsorships. And I think those shows are a thing of the future, and the way for us to feel comfortable with it is to completely disclose they are paid segments. Hopefully that answers your question.
You only wanted two, but I think we're the other television station that does a 9 o'clock show, Your Life A to Z. Our talent, again, we also produce that out of our production arm, not our news arm. The people on that show are not news anchors. We did have a long discussion about this because Brad Perry, for instance, is one of our personalities, and in the news department, a weather guy. He liked going on that show, just sort of walking on, because that's sort of his shtick. And we finally had to say no because we were concerned about that. Even when he was walking on, however, he only took part in segments that were not paid. But our producers are charged with letting people know that these are paid segments.
So, one more point just to clarify here.
You're number three. You're number
four all of a sudden. But, no, I do think it's a good question, and I think you're... You hopefully understand that some stations dabble in that arena, and some stations see great benefit in doing it. We don't. And your reference was to our weather guy going out to a karaoke bar. I'm sure that was just in passing, but we don't do that at all within our news department or any other show on our station. So anytime you see Corey out at an event, whether it's the Ostrich Festival or whether he's at Bondurant, they are not paying a fee for that. It's something that our news department has decided that it's either a feature piece that we think that the viewing public would enjoy, something different, something unique, could be fun, but there's absolutely no money or promotional transaction with that coverage.
What a great transition to what I was going to ask. I see that many of the local stations, they're programming more and more infomercials over the past 10 years or so. Over this time, the infomercials have taken over, sometimes, some stations, over half their schedule, and in some cases, preempt network programming for these paid programs. With the digital multicasting on the horizon, do you see the amount of infomercials on your main channels? I know they're a big revenue producer, but do you see the number of infomercials kind of dwindling down and being moved to the multicast channels in the future?
For the record, we don't do any infomercials on Univision.
We do air some, not in highly viewed time periods, and we do. I do not anticipate seeing us airing more, nor do I see us airing less.
Well, good. Thank you very much. What I'd like to do is just take a quick 10 seconds, 30 seconds, whatever, and come down the row, starting with Janice, coming down to Art. Final comment.
It's about the future of...
About anything you want to comment on.
I think this has been a great discussion here tonight, and you know, you guys really are the future of, you know, what's going to happen in our business. And I don't really think... I think that the things that we're saying now, 10 years from now, will probably be completely different from what we're anticipating, and we really have no idea. The technology is amazing, and it changes every day. And as files can be compressed, the technology gets better and faster. You know, there's just going to be so much out there that's available, and we're all very selfish. We want what we want, when we want it, where we want it, and I don't think that's going to change. And whether that's on television or on your internet screen or on your iPod, and you know, we've got a lot to do to serve you over the next few years, and we're thinking very hard about those questions, and we all want to be in this business. And I think that for us to stay in it, we have to look at our business like a portfolio now, and not just as a TV station, but a portfolio of businesses. And I think you can see that most of us are looking at our business that way now.
Thank you.
First of all, if you guys get into this business, it's probably the best thing you'll ever do. It's one of the most fascinating business, because if you talk to any one of us, there's every single position you can think of at our television station that you get to learn and educate yourself. So the diversity of your career level in this business increases tenfold, just because you get to be with every department and work with every department. For Univision as a medium, we still have to struggle with the two models. The old model, because our cultural viewing habits are still in very, very much rooted within the family, but also the new model, which is the dot-com business, podcasting, you know, digital. So we occupy two realms where we don't, as much as we want to do the new technology, we're very aware that our viewers still very much watch television as a family. But we're definitely, you know, venturing into the digital age at a slower pace than most of the English stations are doing, or the networks.
You know, I would just finish with saying that with every change presents a great opportunity. And I think, you know, rather than get into a bunch of predictions about what the future holds, I would just say that I think these next 5 years are going to be monumental in terms of the change of our industry. 2 years ago, podcasting didn't exist. It's a huge component right now. Cell phone casting didn't exist 2 or 3 years ago. Again, it's another huge revenue stream for the networks and potentially for local stations. So I think as we move into this digital age, I think that it represents a great opportunity for our business to really continue to evolve and to grow. I still think, you know, we're 60 years into this right now as an industry. I still believe that we're in our infancy and not heading in a downturn. I think the future is very bright, and I think for our company especially, the ability to move quickly when opportunities present themselves is what has made News Corp and Fox as successful as we've been.
Thank you. John?
I'll do career advice for those of you about to graduate. Become the best writers you can, because regardless of the platform, you've got to be able to write. Number two, when you're offered a job, don't tell the person offering a job that you need to think about it. It drives us crazy. If you didn't want the job, you wouldn't have applied for the job. Once you accept the job, outwork everybody else at the TV station, and you'll go far.
That's great advice. Whether it is the Stone Age or the Digital Age, basic human needs, you need information. And
you need to be as best as providing that information, and that does come from writing. You need to be a great communicator. We need, in our business, to understand the technology, but the most important thing is content, and local content, and we, those who are best at that will thrive.
Thank you, Greg.
Well, Steve sort of took my line. I was going to say content is king, and you're starting to hear a common theme. It is. I'm not worried about the technology. We're going to figure that out, whether it's over the air or whatever. People are going to gravitate to programs that they value. And so your job is going to be to create those programs of value, whether they're news programs, a trusted news program that you go and you just trust it to get the information you need. It could be documentaries on PBS or whatever it might be. It's going to come down to what you value. So content is king. Don't worry about the technologies. They're going to keep changing forever. And just produce programs that people can value.
Right. Thank you, Doc.
Two comments. One, the future, in my opinion, is summed up in a couple words, and that's strategic partnerships, whether it be partnerships with our viewers, partnerships with clients, advertisers, automotive, partnerships with other media, the internet, radio, print. You've heard some of that here tonight. We can't do it alone. It's a multitask world. We're all busy. We're all bombarded with messages and opportunities to get media consumed different ways, and we want to have a piece of all that. The last thing for you and a couple others preceded me with comments, grab hold of every internship, grab hold of every part-time opportunity, tours of the station. The fact that you're here tonight puts you in the top 5% or 10% of your competitors for those jobs, part-time jobs, full-time. Explore, touch, get inside these stations, learn more about it, and ask us any questions, and we'd love to follow up, and we are honored to be asked to be here tonight. Thank you.
I would just finish up by reiterating what you've heard so many times this evening, particularly what John said. You've got to have a passion for this work. You've got to have a passion for this work. This business is getting harder, not easier. That's not to say it's not getting less fun. This is the most exciting time I have seen in this business. We have new frontiers that we have to find ways to exploit, and you're the people who are going to do that. But you're going to have to really want to do it. The New York Times recently laid off 85 people. At the same time, they are advertising for people, people with web skills, people with multiple skills. So when we're asking you to do more, it's because that's what's required. And frankly, if you can't do more, you're going to have a hard time finding a job. Be passionate and be multi-talented.
Art?
45 years ago, Media Watchdog said AM radio was dead because FM was the new kid on the block. Today, you look at television and you're wondering if it's going to survive. AM radio didn't just survive, it thrived. FM radio, of course, is huge. We have all these different technologies today. It's a different day, same kind of the same scenario, different day. TV will not only survive, it will thrive. And you are so blessed because you're at the front end. You are at the leading edge. And I agree with what Ron said. Apply for scholarships, apply for internships. And whoever it was that asked the question back in that part of the room earlier about being multi-talented with radio, TV skills, writing skills, bilingual skills, do it all. And to reiterate what Jamie just said, emphasize the word passion.
Great. I feel so much better about the future of broadcasting now. Thank you very much.